is run by keepers with keeper beaks and keeper eyes too close together. You could do it better with a blunt pencil on a payphone.
That was the Soft Boys with an animal tin, Lions and Tigers, which is directly connected to today's guest, Carol Baskin, founder of Big Cat Rescue, the Tampa sanctuary that houses more than 100 abused and abandoned big cats. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Carol Baskin back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Carol.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. I think you were on the show about 6+ years ago. And more recently, I think the then director of Big Cat Rescue was on. But I still think it would be sort of fruitful for those listening today for you to kind of provide a brief overview of Big Cat Rescue, the nickel tour, as it were. So first of all, how many cats, well, you said over 100, but how many cats at the moment are there exactly?
We have 102 exotic cats and 6 animals who are not cats at the sanctuary.
And what are those animals?
The 6 that are not cats?
Yeah.
They're African civets and binturongs.
Wow. Okay, cool. So is there, of the ones that are cats, is there a predominant type of cat that...
We have more bobcats than anything else because of our early days when we rescued cats off of 3 different fur farms. So a lot of the initial cats were bobcats, Canada lynx and Siberian lynx.
And for the number that you cited of the actual cats, are you at capacity, or is there a cap on the number of cats that could live there that you're either near or going to reach?
Like most accredited sanctuaries, we usually run pretty much at capacity. I have 3 empty cages right now that we could handle smaller cats up to the size of cougars. But what limits us in our ability to take tigers, which are the ones that are most often discarded in the industry, is our number of green level keepers. So we have a very structured volunteer program where people take care of these big cats. And for them to take care of the lions, tigers, and leopards, they have to have been with us for more than 2 years. And having somebody there to take care of the cats during the week is really tough. There's plenty of help on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
We have over 100 volunteers, but most of those people are coming on the weekends. So that's what limits us in our ability to take more of the tigers.
I see. So if someone called today and said, hey, we have this tiger or these 2 tigers that were discovered at such and such a place, you'd have to say, we're just not equipped at the moment to take on any more tigers. But if someone called with a bobcat,
right,
you'd say, yeah, we got a 3 empty cages, bring them on down.
In fact, a woman from a sanctuary, one of the oldest sanctuaries in the United States, came just a couple of weeks ago, And she said, I want you to take my cats. And I said, how many cats do you have? She has 58, mostly lions, tigers, big cats. And she can't afford to take care of them anymore. So where do all those cats go? And this is a huge problem all across the country.
Yeah. Well, we might get into that because, yeah, that it's so hard. Well, you're on the good side of it, but it's so hard for sanctuaries. Sometimes people fall into having sanctuaries, and they don't realize kind of what's involved and what the commitment level is and what the cost level is going to be. And then, you know, whether it's a few years later or it sounds like maybe this is more many years later, all kinds of financial and other various factors say, hey, now what? So, and then if you're at capacity or close to it, and she's got 58 to try to find homes for, the problem just is compounded. So how did the cats that are currently living with you at Big Cat Rescue get there? I mean, maybe he just gives a little sampling of, you know, two or three stories of how a certain cat arrived there or under what circumstances.
Well, we just celebrated our 20th year, and 20 years ago we were at an auction where taxidermists were bidding on a bobcat, and so to keep her from being killed and made into a den decoration, we brought her home. And that led us to discovering that cats were being killed in fur farms. And so the next year we rescued 56 bobcats and lynx off of a fur farm in Minnesota. The following year, 28 bobcats and lynx. And the year after that, another 22 bobcats and lynx. And then people started calling and saying, would you take my lion? Would you take my tiger? And so that's when we started discovering, this was like 95, 96, that there were so many of these animals in backyards and basements. One of the most recent rescues we just did were five servals, which is like a cheetah-type cat that a woman was keeping in her basement in New York. New York has finally passed laws against keeping these animals as pets, but whenever they pass laws like that, they allow the animals that the people have to stay because they don't want to displace them. But she ended up having to move because of financial issues, and she couldn't take them with her when she moved. So
in those situations, those kind of cats are sort of grandfathered in, as it were, then, on when that kind of legislation is passed?
Yes. I mean, you'll always hear the breeders and dealers saying, oh, these animals are all going to get killed. That's not true. The states have been wonderful in grandfathering in the existing animals and just not allowing the people to continue to breed and buy and sell.
Right, so that woman, if she had gone a different way, couldn't add more cats, but and now she's not sure what she's going to do. But as of that law, she was fine with the ones that she had by the time the law passed.
Right.
She just couldn't get any more. Okay. And so they come from basements and from various other scenarios. And how often do they come from either sort of more legitimate zoos and or circuses?
In the past, the zoos were really notorious for wanting to have cute little cubs on display every year. And so what they would do is they can't have, you know, all of these cubs stay there every year because they'd have to be building these multi-million dollar enclosures for them.
Sure.
So they were shipping them out the back door to private brokers who would then sell them to private owners. And there was a great book Alan Green did called Animal Underworld, and he covered the black market industry in these animals, and that made the zoos stop dealing with the private sector directly.
Yeah.
They still deal with brokers who still sell them to the private sector. But in today's world, the biggest number of exotic cats that end up being displaced are those that are bred for pay-to-play sessions, where you pay to have your picture made with a cub, or you pay to go in and pet a cub. Or like here at Dade City Wild Things, you pay to swim with a cub. And they can only use those cubs usually between the ages of 8 and 12 weeks under USDA guidelines. So that means they have to be breeding new cubs every month.
They have to be replenished, as it were.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back to pay to play in a sec, just because that's going to, I think, fit into some other larger conversations about legislation and other efforts. But just a few more things on Big Cat Rescue itself. Talk about the ways people can visit the sanctuary and take tours or otherwise see some of these cats that we're referring to.
The only way that we allow people to visit is on a guided tour, and the guided tours are an hour and a half long. They have one of our keepers go around with them, introduce them to the cats, and tell them the stories about how those cats got there. And our mission is to educate people as to why they shouldn't be going to see the latest cub at the zoo, or why they shouldn't be paying to play with an animal in a mall, or why they shouldn't be going to the circus. And it's been a huge help to us in our legislative efforts, because as these people now are coming off of the tour, what we have them do is go straight into the gift shop, pick up the phone, and call their lawmaker. And we've had over 700 calls to our Congress to support the bills that we currently have pending that would end the private possession of these animals.
And how many are actually made from the gift shop, where people are that inspired coming off the tour? Or are you saying all 700 have come from the gift shop?
Yes, those 700 are the ones we log in the gift shop.
They're eager to get to it and take some action. Wow.
Tens of thousands have sent emails through our website, but those making the calls are the ones that really have the impact.
Well, that's really interesting, because it obviously sounds like there's an educational impact that's strong and immediate, and as part of the immediate educational impact, there's an immediate legislative impact. Because at the same time, many accredited sanctuaries, particularly those housing exotic animals, do not allow visits really of any kind, or maybe open a couple times a year as a kind of a big open house fundraising thing. So for you, it sounds like the pros of these tours and what kind of impact it engenders outweighs whatever cons that even you and certainly other sanctuaries might feel that there are about having the public on the grounds that regularly.
Actually, we make it our primary mission that the animals that are at the sanctuary are not compromised in any way by having the public come in. We have a lot of cats who really don't like to see the public, and so they're not on our tour route. They get room service from their keepers twice a day, and they don't have to deal with the public at all. But for a number of our cats, they're bored out of their minds. These are incredibly intelligent animals, and they're stuck in a cage all day. And so for them to see a group go by is enrichment, and for those cats that enjoy it, it's a wonderful opportunity for us to be able to educate people and have them really get emotionally connected to these animals. So we've actually had a number of conferences out at the sanctuary for other sanctuary leaders, and have talked to them about this and said, absolutely, you should not compromise the welfare of any of your animals to do this. But if there are ways that you can accommodate the public, it's a great way to really get them engaged with your mission.
And it sounds like a pivotal thing is having those ones that are off the tour, because even before you explain that, I was thinking, because of how some of them came there, I would think, the last thing some of those would want to do is see any human other than maybe somebody was bringing them that day's breakfast or whatever. But certainly groups of people would probably trigger, flashbacks and other unpleasant feelings. So that's how it's the pluses. And just while we're on it, what constitutes, because we mentioned that Big Cat Rescue is accredited and you referred to that, what constitutes an accredited sanctuary?
We're accredited by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries, and they are an independent accrediting body. What they're looking for, and they have two different levels, they have accredited and verified. So accredited are for organizations like ours that do not buy, breed, sell, trade, allow public contact with the animals, nor take the animals off-site to do like school presentations and that sort of thing. So,
brief devil's advocate. So no contact with the public, yet you're having tours. Is that sort of a
physical contact?
Oh, I see what you mean. Tactile contact. Okay, sorry.
Right. And then there are elements of your financial responsibility and that sort of thing that are for the accredited level. For the verified level, all they're asking for are those same things: no buying, breeding, selling, taking animals off site, or allowing public contact with them. But the only other thing that they're asked to do is make sure that they're giving at least good care. And so what we try to do is bring people into, I'm not actually on the board of GFAS, but I just so approve of what they're doing. They bring people into the fold at the verified level, and then often we'll even give them grants to try and bring up their cages and bring up their ability to do a good job, and educate them with these webinars and with the personal tutelage that we do, and try to bring them up to that accredited status where they can actually be self-sufficient and not always on the brink of collapsing, which is what's happening with so many of these non-accredited facilities.
Sure. Okay, cool. Well, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Big Cat Rescue founder Carol Baskin. If you'd like to ask Carol a question, offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, or you can email dj@wmnf.org. So as you mentioned earlier, this 2012 marks 20 years of rescuing big cats. And so over those 20 years, what would you say are 2 to 3 maybe ways the sanctuary has changed most profoundly?
Well, I tell you what, if I had it to do over again, I never would have rescued the first animal. And the reason is, what I've discovered is that even though we have rescued several hundred animals over the course of our 20 years and have really done right by them, we're saving tens of thousands of animals through the legislative efforts. And the 100 animals that I currently care for, we're having to raise somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.5 to $1.8 million a year to take care of feeding and properly caring for those animals. If that money were going into changing the laws so that people couldn't be breeding and exploiting these animals, it'd be over. You know, we would have fixed this problem by now. So we started out as a sanctuary. Well, we started out just by rescuing some animals and not having any idea what we were doing. And, of course, the only people we could go to for advice back then were the breeders and dealers who said you should be breeding some of these rare animals. So we did in the early years of the sanctuary. But when we discovered that there were no places that these animals, these exotic cats, were going to be able to be released back to the wild, we stopped breeding and discovered that the only way we were really going to fix this problem was through changing the laws.
Well, with that in mind, let me just ask you one other sort of similar question, then I do want to spend some time on legislation, which it sounds like we're kind of the whole ball game really is.
Sorry, I just can't leave it alone.
Yeah, no, and I of course plan to ask you about that. But just a sort of a parallel question to the thing I asked about over those 20 years, you know, the way the sanctuary might have changed most profoundly. Over those 20 years, what are 2 or 3 ways you think you have changed most profoundly?
I am something of a recluse. I would just as soon never leave my home. And so to have to get involved in speaking to people, speaking to large groups of people, I speak to colleges and animal welfare groups and, of course, always lobbying at both the state and federal level, it's taken me way outside of my comfort zone, and I still don't like doing it. I hear an awful lot of people say, well, you know, I don't want to get involved in politics. If you love animals, you have to get involved in politics. That's the only way you're going to fix the problem. So it's changed my it hasn't changed my attitude toward it, but it's changed my willingness.
Yeah, you've pushed past that attitude about public speaking and those kinds of experiences, it sounds like. Yeah. So, okay, so really, as you kind of alluded to, I mean, anyone that's really been around the animal world, or especially animal welfare world for any length of time, has found themselves, you know, often asking, well, why isn't there a law against that, or how can we pass a law against that? So, and kind of also, as you've often alluded to, related to that, it's really comes down to often the only meaningful solution to a host of animal welfare problems. So tell us about, some of the legislation currently or pending that you've become involved with that obviously would tie most directly, of course, into big cats.
We've had some great wins here in Florida. It used to be legal to keep cougars as pets, and so we finally got the Florida Wildlife Commission to deem the cougar as a Class 1 animal so that they can no longer be handled and out in public and walked on leashes and all of the kinds of crazy things people were doing. But in July of 2011, probably the most profound change came about as getting it. We got involved with the International Fund for Animal Welfare, the Humane Society of the United States, World Wildlife Fund, Born Free, and the Animal Legal Defense Fund, as well as the Ian Somerhalder Foundation. And we all got together in D.C. We sat around a table and said, okay, with all of our collective organizations, what can we do to end the problem with all of these big cats living in backyards and basements and being bred for all of these horrible purposes? And what we came up with was a 3-prong approach. And so what we decided to do was the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had inadvertently created a loophole because the zoos, the accredited zoos, when they breed tigers, have to go through a lot of paperwork to do that. And people were breeding white tigers, which are crossbred and inbred and don't serve any kind of conservation value. And so U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service didn't want to have to deal with all the paperwork and decided to say, okay, if it's a generic tiger, then they don't have to jump through all these hoops. Well, that just opened the floodgates, and these people were breeding tigers like crazy, mostly trying to produce white tigers because people would pay to see white tigers. So what we did was we went to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and said, you guys really need to close that loophole. And they put it out to the Federal Register a year ago. And for the first time ever, they got 15,000 comments in support of closing that loophole. Usually they get maybe 1,200 to 1,800 comments on a really hot topic.
Yeah.
15,000 is just like crazy. So that was hugely successful. The second prong of the approach is that we believe that USDA could stop all of this cub petting and all of the breeding where breeders are taking cubs from the mothers at just a couple of days of age and then passing them around to people, charging $15, $20 for people to handle them. And we felt like that already violated the Animal Welfare Act as far as creating stress and trauma for the cubs. And so we went to them as a group and did a presentation with a huge thick book I should have brought for you to see about all of the results of that kind of bad activity and how these animals are living in these horrible conditions and the cubs covered in ringworm and spreading that to the public and all of this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And asked them to close that loophole that they had created inadvertently. Well, they said, you know, you shouldn't use cubs under the age of 8 weeks because they don't have any kind of an immune system, and you shouldn't use them over 12 weeks because they can bite a finger off or be dangerous. Well, what they did is it created this 8 to 12 week window, so people are using the cubs for a month at a time. So anyway, we went to them, we asked them to eliminate all contact with exotic cat cubs. They said they couldn't do it under their current rules, and so we filed a formal petition with USDA saying, well, if you can't do it under current rules, you need to make a new rule. Like everybody always says, there ought to be a law against that, and
right.
We agree. And so we did that. And then the third prong was to have federal legislation that bans the breeding and private possession of these cats. And that was introduced in the House in April and in the Senate in October. And we currently have about 60 co-sponsors, so it's moving along well. And we know bills like this will usually take a couple of sessions to pass, so we'll reintroduce it again next year. But I'm confident that this is something that people can get behind because there's no reason to be breeding all of these big cats just for that 1 week window.
And that reminds me one thing that when we were setting up this interview, and you were kind of alluding to the legislation you just mentioned, and you kind of said that those bills will probably die. And then you said beyond that, something like most exotic animal bills take 6 years or so to pass.
Yes.
Why is that? Just, I mean, you know, legislation churns along slowly, but is there something specific beyond that about exotic animal bills that cause them to be even slower to make their way or get enough votes or?
No, actually, I think they probably carry more momentum than an awful lot of issues, too. And there's something that the vast majority of people can agree on. The reason it takes so long is because only 3% of the bills that are introduced actually make it into law. So there's an awful lot of competition just to be heard.
Sure. So it's a percentage issue as much as what the content really is.
The last bill that we got passed was in 2003, and it took 6 years to do it because it was 3 two-year sessions. But it was almost unanimous. When it finally comes to a vote, most people can agree that you shouldn't have big cats as pets and you shouldn't be allowing people to have contact with big cats. So we know it's going to pass. It's just a matter of time.
As that logic spreads ever wider. So this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. We're discussing various topics tied to big cats with Carol Baskin, founder of Big Cat Rescue in Tampa. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. So let's, there's lots more things I want to ask you about, Carol, but we've got some calls and emails here. So hi, you're on Talking Animals with Carol Baskin.
Hi.
Hi, it's you. Go ahead.
I got one question for Carol, and that is, if she has been rescuing bobcats since 1992, how come she bought all of those bobcats as babies and then turned around and sold them to private owners, in which most of them died? And we have the original receipts from the USDA saying how much she bought them for and sold them for. You can get right online. So how can you say that you've been rescuing animals since 1992 when you were buying and selling the exact bobcats that you just claimed you rescued?
Before Carol answers, can I just ask, is this Joe?
Yes.
Okay, so it's Joe Schreibvogel. Okay, because just good to know who we're talking to. So, okay, so go ahead, Carol, and let's have you answer Joe's question.
In the early years of the sanctuary, we felt like we were rescuing these cats from being killed and turned into coats. Putting them into pet homes made perfect sense to me because I thought that's what we were doing. We were taking care of the animals. But what we found is people started calling us up a year later and saying, I can't deal with this adult bobcat, and so they started coming back. Now, Joe's got his facts wrong, and he always does. To give you a little bit of background on Joe, all you got to do is go to tigercubabuse.com. But there you will see videos of him smacking his tiny little tiger with a whip and saying, if they don't want to move, pop them in the ass and make them move. It's also video there of his staff punching these cubs in the face. And we got undercover video of him using a 20-week-old cub that jumped on this little boy and bit him on the leg. When he was here in Florida to do an event at one of the fairs, he told his driver to drive to Oklahoma with no air conditioner in the back for the animals, and got stopped at the border by the FWC.
The Sarasota Fair? And the last question that I have is, are you not a private owner because you're a nonprofit? Are you there?
I said, y'all.
Joe, I think, do you have your computer on? Because I think you might be listening through the delay and getting a little confused. I mean, the timing seems a little off. So I'll go ahead and let you finish your question, then we do got to move on. So go ahead, please.
My last question is every nonprofit organization is a private owner. So is she not a private owner, basically just covered up by a 501c3 to have a private collection of cats?
Our goal is to put ourselves out of business. We don't believe that these big cats belong in cages anywhere. And it is through the efforts that we're doing, both in educating the public and through legislation, that we plan to put an end to that.
So it's fine for you to collect money on a tour to exploit big cats, but in your 20-year plan, you want them all out of zoos and into your place to corner the market.
Like I just said, it's our goal to put ourselves out of business.
Well, in your 20-year plan, you specifically state that you have given up on saving them in the wild. That is not going to happen. So if you're going to force them out of captivity, you are basically supporting extinction of the big cats, and that is absolutely ludicrous.
Our country has 200 years of using the excuse that we need to have animals in cages in order to save them in the wild. And it's not working. The tigers are in serious jeopardy. And we've got to try a new plan. And I think the new plan is to end the captive possession of these animals as pets and props and for their parts so that people have to support protecting them in the wild. Until we do that, those animals are not going to have any place in the wild.
Joe, I do have to move on. I did, frankly, kind of expect your call, and I did want to give you some time to present your point of view and ask your questions of Carol, but I do have to move on now. So thank you very much for calling. Okay, so coincidentally, perhaps right before we took that call, I was going to bring up pay to play. So you've kind of alluded to pay to play and indirectly, at least, your exchange with Joe. And that, again, that was Joe Schreibvogel, who's sort of kind of the, I guess, kind of one of the key players in pay to play, if that's reasonable. So I don't know if you want to briefly explain a little bit more about pay to play. I mean, you've kind of alluded to, but just what that really means and perhaps why Joe called in or has a beef with you, if you want to address that or not, that's up to you. But
when the Big Cat Coalition got together, what we tried to determine was how big is this problem? And what we found is there are about 33 places that we could find that are publicly advertising that you can come and play with a baby tiger or baby lion. And if you figure the USDA guidelines that are limiting the size cats they can use, even at a very conservative estimate, we figure there's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 of these exotic cats that are being bred for that purpose alone every year. Of those 200 cats, probably a quarter of them are coming from Joe Schreibvogel. At the time that he first came up on my radar, which was like 2010, he was doing 50 gigs at malls across the Midwest. So he'd set up on Wednesday, go through Sunday. He'd have to have the cubs there that were the right age to be used for that purpose, and people would be lined up around the mall coming in, handling the cats for just a few minutes, and then it's passed on to the next person and the next person and the next person. And so these animals live a horrible life of just constantly being manhandled and dropped. When the cubs don't want to be held, they kick and scream, and so what the handlers do to make them stop is they hold them under their arms, they bounce them up and down, they blow in their faces, which is what a mother cat does when she's disciplining her cub. It's like the last thing she does before she knocks them across the room. So the cubs know when they get that in the face, stop whatever
last,
you're doing.
Last warning, yeah.
Right. So it's an awful life for these animals, and it's adding to the problem every time they do it. If he claims that he has 200 tigers currently, this is Joe, claims that he has 200 tigers. If he's adding 50 tigers to that every year, probably not even half of them are surviving this horrible handling. But to continue breeding animals to support the animals that you have is just crazy. And that's what we hear from so many of these people. They say, well, we can't support our facility if we don't breed more animals. If you're breeding more animals, if they survive, they're going to be more mouths to feed. And so you can never get ahead of that game. It mystifies me that people think that that could be an excuse for breeding animals. They do it because it's easy money right now.
So, I guess you and Joe probably aren't exchanging Christmas cards this year or any other year, but it's just obviously a very sharp philosophical gulf, as we heard a little bit of a sample on when Joe was on the phone there. So, I guess you made a reference to this earlier, but I'm sure people saw the national news kind of when swimming with tiger cubs. Was a story there for a while, and so I guess that may or may not be hooked into Joe, but
buy some of their tiger cubs from him, so it is hooked into him.
Okay. And so for people who didn't see that story, basically you can go to this place and if you want to, swim with these tiger cubs, and of course my understanding, which may or may not be accurate, is that they're cubs and they're scared, so they're just trying to get back to the edge. So it seems like you're swimming with cubs, but they're basically panicking and trying to get out of the water, right?
And that's exactly the issue. When people are paying to have their picture made with a cub, that cub is kicking and screaming and wants desperately to get away. So some of these people came up with the bright idea that, oh, we'll just put the person in the pool, and then the cub has to hang on to them because otherwise the cubs, feels like they're going to drown, and so then they can get their picture, and they feel like, oh, this cub loves me. This cub doesn't love you. This cub's hanging on for
dear life. Survival instinct, yeah.
And this place up in Dade City got hammered by the Florida Wildlife Commission for doing this, and then the Florida Wildlife Commission came back and said, well, okay, we're going to let you do it, but you can't keep throwing the cub back in the pool. But USDA and Florida Wildlife Commission don't do undercover investigations, so nobody's ever going to be there
enforce
to see
that
she's going to be probably continuing to throw those cubs in there. And for what? For a couple hundred dollars? For an animal that then could live 20 years and costs us $10,000 per tiger per year to take care of them properly. Mm. So when you're adding constantly to the number of animals you have to take care of, and they cost so much to take care of them, it's destined to fail.
Yeah. Well, we're sort of even beyond our time, but I may try to take at least one more call. There's some emails I haven't gotten to. But let me ask about, just because in sort of announcing your appearance, I got all kinds of emails and Facebook messages and certainly stirred up all kinds of reactions. So one of the things that happened amongst those is I received kind of a scorching email about you and Big Cat Rescue regarding rabbits. So we only have maybe a minute or less for the whole final part of our chat here, so I don't know if you want to just briefly address that or...
Sure. For the long story, if people are interested, they can go to bigcatrescue.org and just in the search bar type feeding rabbits, and they'll find a very lengthy explanation that we did of that. We do bobcat rehab and release, where bobcats are sent back to the wild if they were born in the wild. And in order to properly prepare them for living in the wild, they have to know who their food sources are, and we have to make sure that they are capable of killing their food sources. So they have enclosures where they're taught to hunt. We have two baby bobcats right now that are learning to hunt together. And we feel horrible about the fact that any animal is killed for food. I'm a vegetarian. My husband really leans toward veganism. We're not going to kill animals to feed ourselves, but these cats are carnivores and they have to eat meat. So anybody who loves rabbits or loves any kind of animal that's farmed for food, they should be like our biggest supporters, because we're trying to stop the industry that is breeding so many of these big cats out there who are eating all of these other animals. If we can do away with the private possession of exotic cats, all those animals are saved. And so it's just a diversionary tactic that are used by Joe Schreivogel and Kathy Stearns and others like him to try and cause divisiveness among the animal groups. We have a number of friends in other animal rescue groups.
Right. I think who I heard from, I think, was more in the rabbit realm. But I think what may have been overlooked in some of this is the big cat rescue. Those cats aren't all permanent residents, that you are rehabilitating and then releasing the ones depending on how they got there. So that's sort of a different form of how they're cared for and fed and trained if they're going to go back out into the wild, as opposed to kind of just being a lifelong resident.
Right. We usually only have one or two rehab bobcats per year.
Yeah.
So you're talking a very small
And I assume percentage. Those are the only ones where this rabbit situation happens.
The live rabbits, yes.
Right. Okay.
Our other population gets all kinds of food, but it's always arrives frozen.
All right. Well, geez, Carol, I wish we had more time. There's other things. There's callers and emailers, but we managed to chew up even more time than I had allotted for this, and I allotted extra time. But we've been speaking with Carol Baskin. We'll have you back on, of course, and hopefully much sooner than 6 years next time. From Big Cat Rescue, the website, huge, sprawling, deep, comprehensive website is bigcatrescue.org, and they're also on Facebook at Big Cat Rescue. So, Carol, thanks so much for joining us again on Talking Animals, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Okay, so let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. Wanted to play a piece that hooked into our big cat theme, and thought I'd also get acknowledged that the extraordinary comedian Louis C.K. is rolling into town tomorrow for shows at the Straz. So this is Louis C.K. with a piece I'm calling Lions on today's Comedy Corner. I'm talking animals.
And if you are an idiot, you should be selected out. Not by a committee, but by lions. Like, there should be... Like, I saw this woman on a plane. When someone on a plane, this woman gets on the plane, she has red shorts and high heels and a little shirt, and she's like, you know... Like, I swear, if she had made a sound, it would have been like, yeah! Like, she just was... And she's got the bags, and they're way too wide to fit through the aisle. So instead of picking them up or going sideways, she just goes, eh, and just walks away from them. And just... And there's the flight attendant who has, like, rubber shoes, just boring working woman, looks at her, and she's, like, disgusted. But she picks up the bags for her, and she follows her on the plane. I realize this woman's going to have men who want her and women who hate her helping her throughout her life. She's always going to do okay, even though she's worthless. There should be some element where she could maybe get eaten by a lion. Like, we need that. I think we need to reintroduce lions into human society as a variable. Like, we should breed lions and just set them loose in the cities and the malls. Every mall should have, like, four lions. And you don't know where they are. It might be Victoria's Secret or Cold Stone Creamery. You don't know. If there were lions around, everyone would have to be smarter and more interesting. You couldn't just be a fat pig and Carl's Jr. pigging out, because a lion might eat you. You have to be quick and graze and be nimble. You couldn't walk around looking at your phone because you might get mauled by a lion. You have to be sharp. People would be smarter, and they'd be more interesting, because everybody would have a cool story about someone who got eaten by a lion. Or how you had to climb two fences on the way to work. because of the Lions. Everyone would have a great story. I was at the Yankees game, and a lion ate the Kansas City Royals. He ate the whole team.
All right, that's Louis C.K. with a portion of a piece I'm calling Lions, taken from one of his appearances on Letterman. Louis C.K. is in Tampa tomorrow for two shows at the Straz. Try not to be late if you're going, if you got tickets, if you're lucky enough to have tickets. Because Todd Glass, the comic opening the shows, is wonderful. And I don't just say that, because back in the day I managed Todd. This is Talking Animals. We are going to jump into some animal news and announcements, and before we wrap up today, we will be, of course, playing Name That Animal Tune, and the winner will, receive a pass for a tour of Big Cat Rescue. So, just have time for at least an abbreviated version of the animal news and announcements, starting with a local and national story. St. Petersburg, Florida woman was arrested on a misdemeanor warrant Saturday after being photographed 2 months ago riding a manatee. Florida's Manatee Sanctuary Act protects the endangered sea mammal and says in part it is unlawful for any person at any time by any means or in any manner intentionally or negligently to annoy, molest, harass, or disturb or attempt to molest, harass, or disturb any manatee. Ana Gloria Garcia Gutierrez was taken into custody without incident at a Sears department store where she works, according to the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office. The incident first came to the public's attention when Sheriff Bob Galateri held a news conference on October 2nd and asked for help in identifying the woman photographed riding the manatee nearby Fort DeSoto Park in late September. Gutierrez has admitted touching the endangered sea mammal, the Sheriff's Office said. She told deputies that she was new to the area at the time and didn't know it was illegal to touch a manatee. I'm sure where she previously lived, it was totally fine to climb aboard a manatee. Anyways, the maximum penalty is a $500 fine and 6 months in jail. Gutierrez was released on $1,500 bail, the Associated Press reported. And from my side of the state, kind of a sad story on a bunch of levels. A 5-year-old police dog that was retired after being wounded in the line of duty was euthanized Friday after being shot several times during a home burglary on Wednesday, according to the veterinarian who tried to save him. Drake survived the shooting and was flown on Friday morning to Gainesville, where a team of veterinary experts conducted a battery of tests, Dr. Ken Simmons said. The German Shepherd's injuries included broken limbs, wounds to his forehead and jaw, and damage to his esophagus, he said. We found a large piece of his esophagus deep in his chest that was rotting, Simmons said. It was clearly a devastating injury. The bullet wound to Drake's neck severed one of the small arteries that feed blood to that part of the esophagus, and there was nothing that could be done to replace the blood supply or the dead tissue. A 16-year-old suspect was arrested and charged with armed burglary and felony cruelty to animals. He was already on probation for burglary and grand theft, records showed. And at least on this news segment, might be considered deja vu all over again, after a year of political wrangling and opposition from Toronto Zoo staff, City Council has reaffirmed its decision to send the zoo's three aging elephants to the Performing Animal Welfare Society PAWS Sanctuary in California. Zoo management, who had opposed the move, indicated after the 32-8 vote that they will abide by the council's edict. Quote, I think it's disappointing, but we also have to accept the decision of council and move on, said John Trakogan, the zoo chief's executive officer. So, as we have said many a time, we will keep track and keep you posted on that. Also, more locally, there is a benefit coming up this Friday, November 30th, to benefit the Peace River Wildlife Sanctuary. It'll be an afternoon and evening of fun and information. It'll be from 3:30 to 6:30 at Earth Origins Market, Tamiami Trail in Port Charlotte, Florida, and the Peace River Wildlife Sanctuary will get 100% of the donations received, and their website is peaceriverwildlifecenter.com. And this is sort of something, a yard sale fundraiser is on the horizon to benefit an animal rescue. All proceeds, in this case, will go to Wildlife Haven Rehab in Odessa. a 501c3 rescue and rehab for sick and injured Florida wildlife. So people are collecting items to offer at this yard sale. The yard sale itself will not be till Saturday, January 12th, but between now and then, they are collecting items that could be offered at that sale. So best thing to do if you have some items you'd like to donate and help out here is email Octane, Taylor Made, Octane, O-C-T-A-N-E, Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, made at tampa.rr.com and make arrangements to offer those items. And just a reminder that Hillsborough County Animal Services Adoption, the shelter adoption hours have shifted and expanded starting this month. So they are open 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. So making it much more easy, much easier, I guess you could say, to adopt a new animal friend. And and just a reminder that if you live in the 33610 area code, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay Health Center, through grant from PetSmart Charities, is offering incredibly reasonable cat sterilizations for indoor-outdoor cats that do live in the 33610 area code. I can't say the price on the air. That's part of our rules here at WMNF, but it could not be more reasonable. So and that grant, I think, is sort of open-ended, at least until the funds are used, and I think it only began in September. So if you'd like to get in on that, you just need to call 813-870-3304 to make an appointment for that sterilization. So lastly, for now at least, really interesting story in the New York Times. It may have run yesterday. I saw it online this morning, but it's entitled, "Can a Jellyfish Unlock the Secret of Immortality?" And really interesting about some of the properties of jellyfish and what that has taught scientists about life and regeneration and extending life and all kinds of other things. So anyway, that is the news segment for now. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member to win. There'll be a prize, a passport tour, a big cat rescue. To the first person who calls in the correct title of this animal song to 813-239-9663. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. I think we made it pretty easy. Let's take them in the order they came. We got a full bank of phone lists. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Ride the Tiger.
Yes, very appropriate for today's show, isn't it? What is your first name, sir?
Daniel.
Daniel? All right, I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to get your information and send you off a pass to take a tour of Big Cat Rescue.
All right, great.
Thanks for listening. Congratulations. All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, December 5th, when our guests will be Dr. Ken Shapiro, co-founder and executive director of the Animals and Society Institute, who directs the Institute's AniCare program, a psychological assessment and treatment approach for juveniles and adults who abuse animals, and Dr. Nancy Bell, a psychologist who has trained mental health professionals in the AniCare approach, as she'll be doing in a day-long training session to be held in Tampa on December 7th. I hope you'll join us December 5th for that conversation with Dr. Shapiro and Dr. Bell. I also hope you visit our website at talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby Masalas. My thanks to her, and she's here today shooting some video of our interview with Carol Baskin, so you can check out the Talking Animals YouTube channel in the next day or so for those and other clips. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. If you want more talk, tune in our digital channel. The Tom Hartman Show is starting up at noon at WMNF.org/thesource. Otherwise, stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott and the All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. We're closing out today's show with an animal song, perhaps fittingly another big cat song. This is Van Morrison with The Lion This Time, taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachi, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.
They'll lie this time again. He's in the circus in a cage. He's trying to break out of the frame. They'll lie this time. He hears that same old sad refrain, but they can't hold him with no chain. And they just can't denounce his claim, the lion again. And he tried to get free, he knows that something's bothering me. Well, I'm not too blind to see. The lion again this time. They couldn't take away his throne. He knows that he must stand alone. He'll need be held a heart of stone. The lion again. The lion this time again. He's in the circus in a cage. No wonder that he's in a rage. The lion again. the line again.